Hello and welcome to the F24 podcast. My name is David and every week I ask creatives of all sorts to come over to my studio in North Acton to talk about their lives and interactions with London culture and creativity. I'm really intrigued in people's lives and I love the stories we get when we use these three points as an angle for conversation. I love how the three parts cross over and intertwine and become a massive part of who we become as London creatives. It won't always be Londoners, but this is my hometown, so no better place to start. This is F24. This week's conversation is with Mr. Met. Mr. Met is a legend in West London. There are not many people I meet in or on the peripheries of the hip-hop and graffiti culture in London that don't know of this man. This is his story, and we recorded it in March 2018. You can check him out at mental_metsky on Instagram whilst you're listening. Enjoy.
I remember that older people would have like Iron Maiden, Motorhead on their jackets, you know, like jackets. Younger boys, they'd have like a shorter hair, and then they'd have like tassel shoes, toweling socks, you know, like a, some braces and all that business, you know, like quite smart clothing, into two-time Scott.
Chapter 1, London. Met tells us about his start in life and ending up in West London in the middle of the biggest cultural mix he'd ever seen. He goes into detail about his first sightings of graffiti and how the scene was when it first caught his eye. And we talk about the streets of London and music and what he was into as a youngster. And also what led him towards his wayward behaviour.
Thanks for coming round, mate. So let's start at the beginning.
Welcome.
Where are you from?
Well, you won't believe this, but I'm originally from Oxford.
Oxford?
Yeah, it's like a... Because my dad's like a traveller, so I was born on a caravan site, you know.
Romany?
Yeah, he's a Romany gypsy. You know, like, he's like a bit of a hard man, like village madman sort of thing, you know. Even from little, I was just like a... brought up around people fighting and, you know, like a...
So how long were you there? Like, what?
I was basically there until I was 8.
So you lived on a traveller site? Yeah, like, traveller lifestyle, yeah. Properly?
Yeah. Like, it's like even at Christmas. I remember one Christmas, normal people... I didn't even know, like, what Christmas was, but... In a traveller's tradition, we had a swan. We had swans roasted. You know, we had swans.
So it was like full on, like you were born into all your whole world up to the age of 8 was gypsy, Romany lifestyle in Oxford.
Yeah. It's like even my best friend at the time, there was a girl, her name was Violet. And just because she got nits, her dad thought it was disgusting. So he shaved her hair off and her head was bald. You know, like she had to go to school like that, you know, it's like with a bald head. It's like a pretty girl with like long brown hair, and he just shaved the head off one day, you know. Like,
yeah,
it's
not
like
having this.
Like, nah. So, yeah.
Yeah, I never knew.
Yeah, but most people don't know.
You know? That's a gem right there, man. That's a start. Yeah. So then what? So you're 8 years old. What happens?
Basically, what happened? My dad, where he's like a traveller, he's quite aggressive, you know. He's quite aggressive with everything for him. Fist fights, pub fights, all that kind of machoism. Yeah. And what he used to beat on my mum badly. He used to get drunk.
He'd take it out at home.
And he'd come home and he'd beat the shit out of her. And then, you know, like, it was happening all the time.
Yeah.
Basically, especially on a Sunday, it'd be every Sunday, black eyes, closed eyes. He's put hands on me.
Jesus.
And, yeah, my mum left him. In the end, she ran away, you know. Like, she met another man.
Yeah,
and they got me and they said, where do you want to go? Where I was a Liverpool fan at the time, so I didn't really know much about football or whatever. I said,
you couldn't have known much about the country either.
No, I didn't know hardly anything. I couldn't hardly read and write because in that tradition, it's not like a big thing. It's all manual hands. And so basically he said, where do you want to go? And I didn't want to go anywhere with this man. But my mum was going, we've got to go. So Liverpool, because I was like a Liverpool fan. So we went to the bus terminal at Oxford, and then there was a coach for London. So that was the first one, so we got on there.
Seriously? Yeah. So your mum had met, obviously, this guy. Obviously, he was some type of saviour for her, man. Like, or gave her the strength to
decisions. He actually turned out worse, you know. So he was like another abuser. It's like my mum's, she gets caught up in abusive relationships. Right.
There was a bit of something there, which was just like, that gave her the strength to get away from
the
dad.
Did you have
brothers and sisters?
Yeah.
Yeah, did they come with you? Or?
Yeah, they come. Yeah, it's like I had 2 younger brothers and sisters, like a baby brother as well, so yeah.
Wicked. So you all escaped, got to town, first coach basically, first, just brings you...
Oh, mate.
That's a fucking amazing trip to town, man. Yeah. You're like, right, we're going to London.
Yeah.
And then, so what, do you end up in West, or...?
Well, we basically come, when we first got, like we had to get bed and breakfast sort of thing. So that was in Queensway. But coming here, that's like, I think, 1981 or two or something. It's something like that, 81 or something like that.
And that's
but I was already into ska music. I was already into, you know, like the Specials and Madness and
so what happened there? How did that happen? So you're 8-9 years old and you'd already had a taste for music.
Everybody was into it, you know.
Yeah,
from school, the big thing, you know. Like I remember the older people would have like Iron Maiden, Motorhead on their jackets, you know, like denim jackets. The younger boys, they'd have like a shorter hair, and then they'd have like tassel shoes, toweling socks, you know, like a some braces and all that business, you know, like quite smart clothing, into two-tone ska.
And so this was in primary school, like you were in school in Oxford, you picked this up. And you were
I was already into it then.
Amazing. So you come to London and you must have realised as well.
I really got into it. Because when I got to London, where we was in Queensway, they used to have all the shops outside with all the badges and stuff. And then there'd be like Madness badges, the Special so-on badges. And I was so bang into it, you know.
Wicked, man. Yeah. Wicked. Is your mum into music?
Not really.
Not really. So this was really like an external from the house type of introduction to sound. Yeah. And so you hit London and it's the early 80s and you're in West London. And so what's it look like? I mean, what's it? What are you seeing?
Complete culture shock to me, man. Because where are obviously Oxford, coming from a traveller site, you don't really see black people, you know. You don't see Arabic people. And when you go to Queensway, there's just millions of Arabic people.
Yeah.
And it's like our Turkish shops and it's like, first time I get to taste these foods, and I was just open to it, you know. I was just like, I was loving it, you know, because like you're kind of oppressed being a traveller. Even, you know, like when I was in Oxford in the schools, you know, like they wouldn't say pikey or nothing like that, but you know, like they'd be thinking
they had a predetermined vision of you
and stuff like that. Yeah. You know? They knew that you come from a site, so. Yeah, I don't like racism and things like that. I've never liked any of that kind of stuff personally, you know. So
and automatically, without even realizing what racism is at 8-9 years old, you're already like completely open to everything. Like you've come from a certain background, and you're just open to everything. I suppose later on in life is when you hear, "Oh, that's fucking racism, you dickhead."
No, I didn't know what it was, but I obviously used to hear it and. It was massive, you know, like that's some of the first graffiti that I remember, you know, like because I always used to ask what them things were, you know, like I found out that I found out about graffiti while I was in Oxford because my mum, I don't know if it's where she was getting the beats or whatever, but she clung on to religion. So she used to go to Jehovah's Witnesses.
Oh, right, yeah.
So we'd have to get on a bus, and then the whole bus route would have this circle sign with the triangle thing on
the piece.
Thing under the bottom. Yeah? So I asked her what it was, and then she'd be like, "I don't know." And then I used to look at it all the time, and I'd see it from the moment we got on the bus all the way into the city.
And then
I found out it was like a woman's lip sign, you know, like But I didn't know at the time what it was. I just thought that this was like a gang or something, you know, that I was impressed by it.
Amazing. So you'd see, at that age, you'd notice something on the streets, but you didn't know what graffiti was.
I must have been seven.
Yeah, exactly. But there's markings on the street.
Yeah.
You've looked at them and taken note and been like, that's dope. You then hit London.
Mm.
You're in Queensway, West London, early 80s, and you're seeing more graffiti, political graffiti.
I'm seeing political graffiti, but this is really early. I'm seeing a lot of political graffiti. I'm seeing a lot of band names, you know, like The Jam, all kinds of stuff, you know.
Yeah.
Like I'm seeing people writing stuff, and I'm seeing it on the tubes as well, you know. Like I'm seeing like people writing on the insides of the tubes. Basically everywhere I was going, like if I went through a subway, I see like, it's like a different kind of graffiti, you know, like it's like a...
It's more rounded,
but it's more rounded. It'd be like Sarah B and Roy, you know, like all these.
But the style, there was a unique British punk, British ska.
It's a different style, but you'd see it everywhere.
And that was, I mean, that predates graffiti. Like,
good few years.
Yeah, and I mean, there was obviously whatever going on in New York, but it doesn't hit our shores till the early 80s, but. We had to see Rolo, Wilco, remember Robbo telling me about those people, about those people. So you must have, without realising, you were seeing those types of people up.
You'd be seeing, where I've done the interview with Scam. I've done an interview with Scam recently, and he was telling me about Labrador Grove Skinheads.
Okay.
Which was like, they was going like from before the two-tone era. He was telling me, and then I've done a bit of study on them as well. Yeah, so they were a mixed group, you know, like a mixed race group.
Okay.
And he's going that they were all over Ladbroke Grove. You know, like they were all over Ladbroke Grove. So I reckon I was mostly seeing them as well, you know, this mate. Because where I'm at the top end of Queensway, yeah. which is right around the corner from Ladbroke Grove.
Exactly.
So I'm going to be seeing this.
So you're going to walk straight down towards Royal Oak.
Hmm.
And then, yeah, you'll hang a left and all that.
Yeah, so it must have been that kind of stuff yeah. that I was seeing. But yeah, I literally remember the first pieces that I saw was, what did they knocked down, because I haven't got through to it yet, but we moved from Queensway after a while.
Mm-hmm.
And where there was like, where I've got my two brothers and sisters, they've moved us into a real shitty flat in White City Estate. This is when White City Estate was just the pits. You yeah. know, like we had squatters one side, squatters the next side, squatters above and squatters below. You know, like it was yeah. like, it was
mayhem.
Really, really rough. Yeah. yeah. And yeah, we got moved to there. But after a couple of years at the local primary school, they had a White City dog track that was opposite, but then when they knocked that down for asbestos reasons,
uh-huh.
they put boards up, bringing it full circle. The travellers moved into the site. Yeah, they moved into the site, but the boards went up and the graffiti started going up. So yeah. I think this was 1983. I think it was 1983. I think it was for all that Band-Aid stuff, so that was 84. But yeah. I remember the pieces going up.
Do you remember who it was?
No, so it's all names like Wiz and stuff like that. It's really early, you know, like Smurf early, and early Wizard and okay, all that cool. kind of stuff. Yeah, I was influenced by that, or like really influenced by that at a time.
Yeah. Those little sparks
right.
and how important they are, because they're glancing views.
Yeah.
They're really glancing views.
It's mad
views.
That you've just said that, because you just said that you saw that the woman that you perceived as a woman with a kid catching a tag in 86. Well, where I used to go to the White City Adventure Playground, where I was in White City.
Yeah.
Dread guy that was in there, that was one of the guys that worked there. And he used to take us all swimming and everything, you know, like you go swimming with the White City Adventure.
Yeah.
Well, I took out one of them W.H. Smith marker pens and caught some tags in the downstairs bit of the swimming pool. And he said, give me the pen. And he caught a tag himself, and his name was Chase. And that's the same guy that was writing with Scam. But he was an adult. You know, like, well, he was an adult to me. If I was 11, he might have been 17 or something. Yeah. So, but I was like, wow, you know, like.
So what were you tagging? What?
I used to write Dino.
And so that was off the back of the political and Scar and punk
yeah, yeah,
graffiti.
I used to write
so
Dino.
That was, that's what inspired you.
It's like
you.
Breakdancing, BMXing, and everyone just had a name. You know, like, my name was Dino, you know, like, it's, I don't know why I got Dino.
And so this has all come through going to school in West London.
Yeah, everybody.
Youth club. All that type
it's
of stuff.
It's like all that times of Michael Jackson doing moonwalking, you know, yeah. like I think it'd be like a Thursday you'd watch Top of the Pops and everyone was there.
Right.
That music was coming through, you know, like you'd hear that, you know, that sort of UK sort of sound and
yeah.
yeah, I was really into it, man.
And so Dino comes up and then you find out that when you saw this youth worker do this tag,
yeah,
did it? Because that must have been the first time you'd seen someone else do a tag, apart from
friends. No, I used to see it all the time. I was like,
but did you see people do it?
Yes, I saw yeah. people all doing it. They were all doing it on White City. They used to, basically, people on White City, like I say, like, you know, like 84, 85, they'd be dressing like a, you know, like have a breakdance movie or something. They'd have like cut off their jeans.
Yeah.
So they'd cut them into jean shorts.
Yeah.
And then the bottom off. They would put like laces into them and sew them like they look like leg warmers. Do you remember that paper?
Yeah, man. Amazing.
And then they would cut the sides, and then have the sides cut at the bottom, so they'd be flared over
onto the trainer,
onto the fat laces, onto the fat laces. You know, so like the fat laces.
And so this was on White City Estate.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you were just used to. I'm going to jump in. I'm taking part in this.
Yeah, I just loved it. I used to like go like in a. I'd go there basically after school every day and break dance, but it'd just be like normal break dance.
Yeah, it was just the life.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it started coming into wrecking of pens, you know, like I got caught in primary school and then we got took by the police back to the school where we bumped off and we stole from some little Chinese shop that used to be in Shepherd's Bush on the roundabout.
Okay. Like
and I got caught there and I think that was 1985. And we got brung back to the school because I went into the stationery shop and goes, have you got the fat graffiti pens? That's what I thought they were, and then sleeved them and got caught.
Asked them and then sleeved yeah. them. Amazing, man. So you're just about to turn into a teenager.
Yeah.
You're running around the city. What's it like? What's London like? Are you going around the city? Have you seen more of the city?
I'm going around the city, but not on the graphing as much.
What are you seeing?
The graphing is just like us, because there was never ever paying for tubes.
No.
There's never ever paying for tubes.
No.
That was just part of it. I'd just look out the window. I wasn't really... I didn't class myself as a writer. It's just something that I used to just do.
And then, but
I was more of a shoplifter.
Yeah,
I liked shoplifting and doing that kind of stuff.
And so, were you doing that? I mean, well, I want to know about you branching out from West London, seeing more of London, basically. And so, if that was through shoplifting,
brilliant. My day to day would be like a pretend I was going to school, like get on some Supertenants or some Thunderbirds. So, you know, like that's what I did. Like get buzzy, and then I'd go either to Oxford Street or Carnaby Street or something, and just shoplift stuff. Shepherd's Bush Market for Samsonite, holsters and leather, you know, like leather pouches and stuff like that. It's stuff that I could sell. This is well before Berlin and socks and things like that, because that came in the late 80s. Just basically stealing anything, you know, just anything and everything. And I would always have a pen on me and I'd write. And then just going to like Littlewoods or somewhere like that, and then they'd have something like Mario or something in there, and then just playing it the whole day, you know, like just on a nest. And then the staff would come and they'd be like, right, what are you doing, sort of thing, and shouldn't you be at school? And I'd be like, no, I've got the day off, my mum's shopping. Yeah, but I used to be in there so much playing these things. I don't know how they never clocked on, you know. I played the game until I clocked it. I'd be there like from 10 o'clock in the morning and have no lunch, no nothing, and just sit there playing it till like 3 o'clock, like a madman, you know, like.
All right, so let's move on a touch.
Mm.
You're firmly gripped into graffiti as a thing. Mm. Like, it's something... I don't even know if I should say you're firmly gripped. It's basically something you do along with your rest of your London lifestyle and upbringing. And you're in your mid-teens. Crime's obviously part of your lifestyle. Education, fuck up?
Well, this is where the graffiti come to an end, you know, like for a little bit, because... I just went totally off the rails. As I say, I was drinking, but then we had a lot going on in my house with my stepdad. He was like a total abuser. He'd pretend that he loved you, and then on the other hand, he'd play it to make you do stuff. You know, like, so if you didn't do it, you'd get a beating.
Yeah.
But then if you did what he said, he'd make out like, I fucking protect you. And, you know, like, so he used to play me, but then to get off on the other side, I take things like I started taking drugs.
Okay.
You know, like when I was young. So I started sniffing gas.
Okay, yeah.
And I started sniffing gas really bad. And then I started drinking like things like Supertenants and stuff like that, like 11 and 12. Fucking and, you know, like drinking Thunderbirds in the morning and Tippex sniffer, like Tippex thinner sniffing. And, you know, like, so doing that and the stealing... And then going waywards, what I started, I even stole from the teachers. I stole like the headmistress's purse, you know, like from the staff room.
Yeah.
And it all caught up with me in the end, and I ended up in a child, like children's care.
Okay.
So yeah.
How old are you then?
14.
14. So you had three or four years of just going completely off the rails.
Yeah, and then they said that my mum can't control me. You know? Yeah. So where she couldn't control me, it's like, well, you're going to have to go into the White City Children's Home. So basically, that's where I went.
Chapter 2, Culture. After quite a rocky start to life, Mr. Met finds himself in foster care. He gets deeper into music and graffiti culture and tells us of battles with PFB and the start of CBM. Street crime and drinking start to become a problem, and by the late 90s, things take their toll and the path he's walked down comes to a sudden dead end.
So you stayed local then?
Yeah, always stayed local.
Man, fucking hell. So, 14, you're in this White City Children's Home. Do you still go to school? Do they still send you to school? The thing is,
I got chucked out of the school. That's why I got chucked out of school, because of the things. I don't know if I had mental health problems at the time, but I was doing like...
Well, you didn't have a stable home.
No, I was doing really wayward things. Like I threw a stone at the headmistress's head.
Yeah.
And I was just doing mad stuff, but I was doing things like that at primary school as well, you know, like, so... I was never diagnosed as anything, because you didn't go to doctors in them days. There was like, I've never even heard of things like ADHD or nothing like that in the 80s or anything, you know. So I was basically left to my own devices from early in the morning to late at night. I mean, I didn't, even when I was at my mum's. I didn't used to come home like when I was like 11. I didn't used to come home till like 12 o'clock at night or whenever I wanted to come home.
You just didn't care.
No, she didn't care. She didn't give me no money to eat or nothing. I'd just go out in the morning and then come home at night. It'd just be basically be me and my dog. You know, I'd have like my dog that I had, my mom called dog Rex, and he'd just be out of me the whole day. You know, that'd just be it.
Yeah, and then you go home, sleep, and do the same the following day.
Yeah, just do
and it. Then when you were at the home, what was it like? Same, just well, out then, all day. Then,
if there was like some food under the grill, remember that? You get like a plate of food. Like, yeah. If there was some food under the grill, my brothers and sisters in it, I'll be lucky, you know. But
So you get into you go into this children's home. You still in West London, so you're living at the West London lifestyle still. You're still out there doing your thing, making your money. You're putting up a few tags here and there. Music, is it still a factor? Right. Or has life, like, is, are you getting to this stage?
This is where it started getting really good. Because when I went to White City Children's Home, then I had a black foster mother.
Okay.
Yeah, and her name was Josie. And she wouldn't put up with no shit.
Yeah.
She even told me, she goes, I'll get my boys from Harsden and I kick the shit out of you. You come down here, you get feisty with me. I can't bring them down here because they're big boys and they give you some licks.
Yeah.
Like that, yeah. She goes, I'm not putting up with your shit. So she'd take me on a 220 bus,
yeah,
like to my centre that I used to have to go to. So she'd take me in there and she made me like an egg on the back of the bus, some stinking egg that she'd be peeling. And this is the year, like, it's like 89, so it's the year of the Rude Boys. Everyone's got like ball game jeans on, chippy jeans.
Wallabies.
Wallabies, pinrolls, you know, like a...
Blammos.
Yeah, it's just... Everyone's just looking fresh, you know. They got like fucking wedge haircuts and everything. And there's me on the back of the bus with this woman that I respected because I know she just slapped me on the bus eating a boiled egg, you know, like a smelly boiled egg, you know. So it's like the end of this drinking thing for a bit. She even took me to the doctor and she said, he's on drugs, like that. And it's like... I felt so ashamed, yeah. She goes, get him off the drugs now. But yeah, she sorted me out. Like, so I was in the children's home, but I was also going to centre. So I was just getting into like the rude boy culture. I was getting into that, which I did like, you know.
So the rude boy culture, explain that.
I was listening to things like Cookie Crew and all that sort of stuff, you know, like the dance moves that are coming out. I had friends that are into that step dancing, all that business. I liked all that. But then I started getting back on the graph, you know, but I couldn't get fully involved in it because with Josie, she is not letting me get out at night because she'd be saying, you're not coming back into their children's home. Then you're going from here to Stanford House.
Yeah,
carry on your madness. Stanford House is basically a young person's prison.
Okay, yeah.
So you go like, you're going from children's home.
Yeah, and you'll make this decision. She's telling you, you can make this decision.
Yeah, you do it.
You stay out all night, you're not coming here, you're going there.
You're going to keep fucking about, you're going to end up in the Stanford House.
So music's got you, Rubo culture's got you, and you're like, all right, cool. I'll do a bit of bombing in a day maybe, but I'm not on this night.
Yeah, I couldn't do a lot.
You could see Josie was doing.
Yeah, I couldn't do a lot until I got out, you know. But come 1990, that's when I got back on it, you know.
And your relationship with Josie stayed good?
Yeah, it stayed really good. Last time I saw her was at Carnival about 10 years ago.
Your time with her was brilliant. You know, finished
I've never,
well.
I've never respected a woman like her.
Yeah.
I don't think
she sounds like you know what I mean? Yeah. Someone men need sometimes, yeah,
She's good.
So it hits, what, 1990, you say?
Yeah, 1990.
How old are you?
16. Back 1990, about I'm 16. Then I really started getting on it. You know, like I started really getting back on the graph.
Yeah.
You know, like Elk was really up, you know. Like Elk was actually killing the Hammersmith and City line. You know, and it's like, it hit me, you know. Like and then seeing Diet. And that, you know, like Diet come back and all them people, it's like, ooh. So yeah, I started getting back on it, you know.
There was a movement that you'd seen had literally transitioned from those early tags that you saw.
I didn't even know that there was the big raids in I think it was 89, a lot of people just went quiet. I didn't know anything about that because I was already in the children's home and I didn't know anything because where I was off the scene for a little bit. So where I've come back, I ain't known any of this stuff. It's like it's all brand new, you know.
And what are you seeing within the culture? You got friends within it? You meeting other writers?
No, that's what I'm saying. All the people that I started with, they were like a... Because when I first started writing, this is what surprised me. When I first started writing, when I was in Hammersmith School, most of the writers, apart from a few other white writers, there wasn't a lot. They all seemed to be Moroccan or black guys that were involved in the culture.
What school was that?
Hammersmith.
Oh, right, cool, because I knew Moroccan and Spanish writers from Edgware Road.
Mm. But there didn't seem to be like a lot of white boy writers, you know, like it was like, you'd be like looked at kind of funny, you know, like the white boys would be more into like football or things like that, you know.
There was one white kid on my estate that wrote Torment. Yeah. He was in SBS actually.
Yeah, there's when the school was Snow.
Oh yeah.
He used to write in R. But yeah, it was like there was a few, but there was more Moroccan writers
than
there was white writers.
Yeah.
So that's what surprised me, because when I've come back out and then I'm getting back into the graphing, there's more white writers. There was much more white writers than what there was ever black writers. You know, like a, like back in the day.
There seemed to be a change.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, it all surprised me. It was like completely different. You know?
Do you think that's got something to do with, and I'm just literally just trying to put two things together, but is it the same as the birth of hip-hop in America? And, you know, it's come from black culture and, you know, it's a black voice. And then within 5-10 years, and especially now, it's well, basically, yeah, white people all over it. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? And I suppose maybe the same had happened here. Hmm. It was, although the Rockers and the Muds and the Scarheads, that was a mix. But when the hip-hop essence came into writing on walls, not just ska music or rock, when that hip-hop essence came through, maybe it was a calling for young black people, which then by the time you came back out, you were like, culture's completely changed.
Yeah,
like,
it this completely is, changed.
I wonder if it is that thing though, because white people,
they do like to latch onto things, you know.
Yeah, that's so, literally what.
They do like to steal. If you look at their history, you know, it's like.
Yeah. Maybe that's what it was.
Maybe it was. But I mean, I was into it from day dot. You know? Like, it's like even now, you know. Sometimes I chat to people and then they go on, but it's like I've been into it since. I mean, someone like Meme, he's exactly like me. He's been into it forever. It's like I've looked up to Meme.
Yeah.
And his tag. Basically from the start sort of thing. Literally, you know? Like, from the start, you know, like since like my school days.
Yeah.
There's certain people, but I mean, even with Meme, you would see things written over his name, like round Labrador Grove with that fuck off toy, fuck off white boy and all the rest of it. It'd be written on his thing by like KTC and stuff like that. So I mean, there was that as well, you know.
Yeah,
so
there was that line. I mean, I suppose when it happened and when
like now it's like it's all changing a bit now.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, seems like...
Well, it changed a long time ago.
Everybody's having a bit of fun now, you know.
Yeah. It turned into a massive mix. But yeah, I mean, I just wonder, because, you know, we know where hip-hop came from. And it was just you saying that then, that because you got to see these two sides. I mean, obviously, we have people like Elk and Drax and Frank Dyer doing this thing. There was always been there, but yeah, there was this thing. Mm. So we were saying... Other writers around that time, 1990s, were you hanging out with other people then? Did you have what was your group? Were you just like a group of party goers?
Basically, it's like I used to be looking for. Well, I used to be getting cussed around like 89, 90. You know, like because I was like 16, and it'd be like on White City Estate, it'd be like they'd be like QPR football boys.
Yeah.
So they used to call me things like you fucking grey man. Oi, mate, you're grey, man. What are you bobbing like that for? You've got a fucking stone in your shoe. And you know, like, they'd be giving me all that all the time, yeah? So it's like, well, I've been brought up with Josie, where she's my foster mum. She's a black lady, you know? She's a West Indian lady. So it's like, obviously, I'm into pinballs. I wanted things like a gold tooth.
Yeah.
You know, like, I had lines in my hair. I was like a confused little kid, you know?
What
like,
music were you into?
I was into a bit of ragga as well, you know? Like, I was into ragga, I was into hip-hop. I remember I goes, I've got some bad ragga tune, yeah? And I played some KRS-One then. She goes, what the fuck is this shit? You know, like, she could not, like, she heard KRS-One doing that sort of fake ragga twang.
Yeah, yeah.
She did not like it, you know? She's like, nah.
Nah, it's not right.
But, yeah.
So you had a real mix put into you, do you know what I mean? And that was the other thing as well, growing up where you grew up as well, it's predominantly a black area, West London, back in the 80s and 90s, you know what I mean?
White City, definitely.
It's a proper neighbourhood, a real neighbourhood. It stretched all the way through, actually, down to Chippenham, you know what I mean? Right through Grove and, you know, all of that. You go through the 90s, starting off with rude boy culture. What's the city like? What's it looking like? What's the trains looking like? What are people bombed, like on the streets?
Like bombed. Like 19... I sort of went a bit I went heavy into graph in 1991. Yeah. I even got bagged. I think I got bagged in 1991. I think it was 91 or 1990. I got bagged on the inside. You know, like there was a few of us and I had Stanley knives up my sleeve and the graph squad pulled us out and then I was dropping all pins and all kind of stuff, you know, like we got caught on the insides. We was being followed the whole day, you know. It's like but the insides were smashed and the outsides were smashed, you know. It's like really good, you know. Yeah,
amazing.
See, like what I miss about them days is like some of the battles, you know. You used to have like battles and then they'd have like personal battles as well. So I remember Fest and Ray having their battle and the things that had been written on the outsides, I used to see it. I watch it riding on the big mitt, you know, like things that Fest would be writing about Ray.
Yeah.
And then Ray on the comeback. So it used to be just good, you know. It's good.
Amazing, man. Craziness.
But yeah, that's the year I think 91 is the year when I went to the last train jam. I think it's the PFB train jam.
Yeah, they were.
But we went there when we was having war with PFB.
Okay. So who's we? CBM?
No.
No.
Just me and Cine.
Okay.
Against the whole of PFB, yeah. It's like it's just started over. They went over him, so he went over them, and then they started crossing him. So where he's
your guy.
Been teaching me hand styles, I started crossing him. Where I'm the only West London writer in AVZ.
Okay, yeah.
And Mint only lived on the next road from me as well, you know. Yeah. So it's like they're all around my road and my house and everything, you know. So it's like, don't know why I did it. I think it's mental health, you know. Like it's like I'm not even lying. And it's like I could have most probably got and hung about of them guys because I was pretty similar to them. But yeah. So we went to the train jam anyhow. So it's like a big warriors meeting. Yeah, it's like a all underground in there. I think it is Kensington High Street Station where we had to meet. So anyhow, we got there and before it's even started, me and Cindy's upstairs. Cindy's trying to take the piss out of Elk behind his head because Elk's on the payphone, so he's got a paper above his head waving it.
Just being annoying.
Elk this and that. And next thing you know, I look down the stairs like that. I'm all laughing like it's a joke thing. I look down the stairs and then I'm seeing like these big football boys just running upstairs here. So I'm seeing like Rosa, I'm seeing Sean. And all them, like, I'm thinking, fucking hell, man. And then I see him, Ross has just got a pure gold duckle duster on the air, and he's just run upstairs. I thought he was Sovereign Rings at first. And he's just punched Cindy straight into the head window. Yeah, it's just like, yes, it's going off. But yeah, that's when I thought, oh, this is a bit serious, man.
And look, they didn't play about.
No, they didn't. They were like writers, but they were like also geezer writers, you know, like they were all into pubs and rave culture and
football,
football with it for you,
yeah, really deep in it, man. So how did the rest of the 90s pan out for you?
Then from there it's like we started doing a CBM, then it's like, right, fuck this AVZ thing because the guy can't back it, so it's like, right, CBM. So CBM just went massive. CBM at one stage turned into about 60 heads, you know, just like street robbing. I'm sure you remember, you know, like we They most of them couldn't even write.
So when I started writing in 95, and obviously just up the road in Kilburn, so I deal with Kilburn in 95, you know, and I ended up moving my name, actually spread more northwest than it did west. It's what I kind of, my girl was in Kentish and all that, so I was going across the top of London. But West London lore, you know, folklore was coming through to me because I'm only up the road in Kilburn. And I knew, if you're going to go down, you're going to go and have a look at Trellick.
Yeah.
It was behind this massive fence at the time, and it was just something to look at. You might go there, you might go and have a look at the pit, and you might go and walk down under the Westway.
Oh, mate.
And whatever you fucking do,
that's it. That's our spot.
The moment you see, hear anything Met related, CBM related, get the fuck out of there. And to be honest, actually, don't go. That CBM, that name,
it said
chills.
Even people like me in that, it's like a. He's been in my house and he's going, we didn't even want to chat to you in the 90s. We didn't want to chat to you. Because that's the dude, like, I should just be, like, lawless.
Listen, no, man. I didn't care. Just up the road from the roundabout. And I was writing. I was, like, into writing then. And I was, like, I see you lot up at that roundabout. And it was...
But that's where I went. That's where I first met Pure.
Yeah.
And, like, he had the name CBM. That's the whole thing. He had the name CBM. But he was from that super, super posh school. You know, the one down near Hammersmith? Like my boy school, yeah. He went there. So, where I've met him in Shepherd's Bush, and he's got the baggy jeans on. He's got the skateboard and I think I'm having this geezer. I thought, I'm having him. Yeah. So it's when the subways were really bombed. I thought, I'm having him.
The underpass is at, and I see him.
I see him looking at the graph. So I was like, that's the first thing. So I've gone up to him because I was already into street robbery. So I've gone up to him and I was going, yeah, what you write? And he's going, right, rack. And then the voice is like, whoa, I'm having him, even if it's for the skateboard.
Yeah, I goes,
have you got a Browns? And then he's just brung out 20 Marlboros, like 20. He's just like grabbing them. And he goes, I've got paint. I live around the corner. I'm like, what? So he just took me to his like mum's basement thing around the corner. And he's got like all these smooth rights. And he's no name. He had no name at the time. He wasn't even known. He's just climbing up. But he's racking all this paint. I thought, whoa. At first, I thought, I can actually use this guy.
Yeah.
That's how our relationship started. I looked at that paint closet and I thought, whoa. Like that, yeah. But then we hooked up a kind of a relationship.
You ended up kind of protecting him.
Yeah. I never robbed him. I started protecting him. But then through the 90s, he was bringing me to the upper class parties, which I should have never went to. Like one party, for instance, I got so smashed. He goes, I'm never ever letting you drink cider again. Like that, yeah. It's like I got so smashed. I walked through a patio window and then just went into the person's freezer. I went into the person's freezer and just started loading out chickens and all kinds of stuff into freezer bags. Took all the father's drink and everything and then just stung the decks on the floor. They were playing OPP. I remember it. They were playing OPP and I was like, like that, and just walked out with these freezer bags of food. I don't know why I did it. I didn't even eat the food. I don't even know what I haven't done it for. I was trying to prove that I was a bad man.
So how long did you hang around with Pure? I know you still know him, but
since
you hung out with him.
Yeah, I hang about with him all the time.
But you did. I mean, in the '90s, you were with him all the time. Because I saw Pure and Met.
I get loads of fights over him. There's like loads. I basically got stabbed over him twice.
Yeah,
been stabbed over him twice. You know, like we went to Richmond and he was getting racial abuse off a load of teenagers and everything. Yeah. There's black guys as well that has given him the racial abuse because he's half Asian. But I don't think it is that he was half Asian. I think it's more that he's upper class.
Okay.
And where he lives, like, it's high top and everything. So,
but you could tell. Exactly.
That he was upper class. So I think. And then where I've gone in the defense of fighting for him, I've been stabbed over it. You know? So it's like we've got like a chalk and cheese sort of thing going on, right?
Yeah. But you're still, I know you're still in contact with him.
Yeah, we're still close, man. We're still close. He's like, he's really good friends with my missus. He's really cool with all my kids and everything. Yeah.
Brilliant.
And certainly vice versa, you know.
That is crazy, though, man, to come up here with him. Fuck you. What's he doing in the tunnels at Shepherd's Bush Roundabout? What the fuck are you doing, bro?
He lived there.
I don't care if you live there. Get the fuck out.
He was just skating through. It's just like, it's funny.
That's amazing, man. So loads of partying.
But then I introduced him when we got CBM going. Because at first it was just basically him and another guy, another posh guy. But then when we got it going, it started going through the flats. So it went through White City, then it went through Wormhole, then it went through Edward Woods. It's going through loads and loads of flats. So it's going through MCs as well. Because the garage thing, before the garage thing, you had the jungle.
Yeah.
So it's all these jungle MCs that are coming off hip hop.
Yeah.
They were all into CBM as well, you know. So it was like, and I was bringing Pure to these houses and flats. I was bringing him into these like flats.
Yeah.
Like, people have been there smoking shit spliff shit. And then like, and he's just in there. He's like, yes. And it's like, he was liking it. I could tell he was liking it because he'd be drinking champagne in there. You know?
Yeah. Fucking great stuff, man. So what happens when we get to the, you've obviously had, you know, all those, the stories of keeping away from Mr. Met and the CBM boys.
And started getting brilliant.
Pure, what Pure was like as a person never came over to us. No. It was just, we knew of Pure and Met. Yeah. And I've got photos of yours to's work, old blocky style with big serifs on the edges of the letters. Like, I've got those types of pieces. So, yeah, we didn't know. I heard later on, oh, really? He went Latimer? Okay, he's one of them. Okay, cool. Yeah. So you had a great 90s with them. The 2000s starts.
It didn't start.
So what happened?
It never started at all. What happened? This all went through into like the mid-90s of me street robbing and drinking and then I mentioned smoking shit spliffs.
Which are?
Basically cocaine and weed and that mixed together, you know.
Yeah.
So like, I smoke a lot of that. And there's a few writers that have passed from, they did now, but in that era, that was like a thing, you know, like mid-90s.
And then
we was doing that and I'm still writing everything, but then I got ill.
You got ill?
Totally ill. I didn't go out for 2 years. didn't leave my house 2 years after being stabbed. I got so paranoid that I just went, I didn't leave the house.
So what, was it like a, what, your mind or was it your body?
My mind. I couldn't leave the house. And then it messed up my body. And then what happened in the end, where I couldn't get out or whatever, and I could only get out to the local shop at the corner of the road, basically if I pushed myself, and then I turned super alcoholic indoors and in drink, and then I just turned, and then I got sectioned.
What I did,
I shouldn't have done, I just went totally off the plot. I had a cheese wire in my back pocket and a hammer and a screwdriver. My friend saw me on the street. He goes, "You're totally crazy," and I'm thinking, he goes, "You have tinfoil on your fingers and all kinds of madness." Yeah, it just don't make any sense. Yeah, but he sent me to the doctors.
Yeah,
a mental health doctor that's around the corner, and that's it. I just decided that I'm gonna try to kidnap the doctor. Yeah, like Dr. Jolly. So I've gone over the counter and I took him with a screwdriver, and I took him into the garden. That's when the armed response unit and everything come. And that's where I got sectioned for, like, basically I've done 2 years.
So, one sec, your guy, firstly, your friend sees you in the street, and he notices he's fucking going crazy. Yeah. So he jumps out of the car.
Yeah, he sent me, he got like tinfoil on my fingers, he goes, you're like waving your arms about, and it's early in the morning, he goes, you're acting nuts, so he's pulled over to try and chat to me, and he goes,
he goes,
so he's took me to the doctor's surgery around the corner. And that's where I've gone to.
And then something else has tripped in your mind, and you're like, "Fuck it, I'm getting this."
Yeah, I'm going to get the doctor. So I tried to get the doctor, and they had to bring like the unit in that year. So this is what's happened. Well, they've got him in there. I've got this Dr. Jolly at the back here, right? Well, I've got him, and I want a cigarette. This is the worst bit, because I've got him with the screwdriver in there, and then the police come, and then they've got shields and all that business. The helicopters going around in the back garden, and they're going, "Release him, Gary, release him. Come on, this is going to get bad, yeah?" And I go, no, guys, I want a cigarette, yeah? And he goes, yeah. Remember, it's embassy, yeah? They give me the embassy like that. Before I even lit it, mate, I was like, it was down. Next thing you know, it says injected, yeah? And it was like Silence of the Lambs. I was in one of them chairs, and I'm going backwards like that, yeah, into the ambulance, yeah? Right? And I've got into the ambulance, and I've conked.
Thank God for your friend.
Yeah.
You wouldn't be sitting here.
Then I had to be, like, sectioned for, like, over 2 years. That's what I'm saying. People like Pure, what I've sectioned, he come out of his ear. People like Rise, I don't know if you remember Rise.
Yeah.
And then Device was downstairs in the hospital as well. There was like, there's a few writers in the hospital when I was in there, you know, like I'd sectioned off. So, yeah.
Wow. Wasn't expecting that bit either.
Yeah.
You know, so when was that?
That was 99 to 2001.
Yeah, so that's why, another reason why I didn't know or would have known, I left London just at the end of 99. And that 99 for me was a fucking horrific year, actually. So I didn't do much painting that year. And so, no, I wouldn't have heard.
I remember you was friends with Mace.
Yeah, I met Mace in the early 2000s.
Yeah, Mace was my boy in that. So basically, even they started letting me,
Where was this place?
Charing Cross. The first I was in Blairwood, that is in Ealing. That's the high security place, because when I first went there, this Dr. Jolly guy, the one that I've done with the thing, is like, I goes, because I was so mashed from their drug shit, I goes, am I going somewhere good? Because they goes, you're going. I goes, am I going somewhere good? They goes, yeah, you're going somewhere. Where was I avid reader? Yeah, because I've learnt myself to read.
You taught yourself to read,
right? So they goes, you're going to have a full library, Gary. They goes, you're going to have a swimming pool as well, yeah? I goes, yeah. I thought, yeah, well, this is good, yeah? Right? So then they give me more drugs and make me swallow them. And then I woke up in a, like, nothing similar to this, but smaller.
Yeah.
But all the walls are, like, coloured, like, you know, like a, you know, like a 80s kids cartoon sort of thing. But they're padded. I never realised. And I'm butt naked, yeah? Right? Like that, yeah? What he's done to me, he's set me up. This Dr. Jolly set me up, right? When you hear the full story, this is quite funny, because he's proper set me up for what I've done to him, yeah? So I've got cut butt naked, yeah? And I don't know where the hell I am. I'm laying on this floor thing, and there's a glow. You know where the lights are off, so there's a glow like that.
Around the door.
Yeah, there's a woman sitting there on the chair like you, yeah? So I'm thinking, she's an angel, yeah? You know, like, she's all pale and everything. And I goes, am I in heaven? I goes, like, are you an angel? She goes, no, Gary. She goes, you're in Blair Ward. Like that. She goes, you're in Blair Ward. She goes, you're sectioned off. She goes, there's no getting out of here, yeah? She goes, like that. And I goes, I want something to eat, yeah? Like that. So this man brought me a corned beef sandwich and then he gave me more drugs. Next thing you know, I woke up, I've got some pajama things on me. What they've done, what this Dr. Jolly's done to me, yeah? I used to have the shaved head. Remember, I used to always have the shaved head, and yeah. I've always been heavily tattooed. But people in the late 90s, they wasn't heavily tattooed. You didn't used to see a lot of people tattooed, yeah? So obviously, he's mostly thinking I'm like some fucky looking guy with a shaved head, yeah? Not knowing that my hip hop background, yeah? So he stuck me in a 30 man unit with 27 of the guys being black guys, right? And then me and some other Irish guy. That thought he kept saying, I'm the devil, I'm the devil, I'm the devil, yeah? So I think he's thinking that I'm going to get a beating.
Fucked up, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to get a beating. But actually, I had the best time in there because we was just listening to that old dirty and everything in there. You know? So it was just banging. It was just banging, you know?
Jesus Christ. Fucking hell, G. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So that gets you out on the streets again, what, mid-2000s, so, that is?
No, 2000. No, this is 2001.
Yeah, 2001.
Yeah.
So you've had a fucking, an absolute, well, a crazy fucking late 70s and early 80s.
Hmm.
And then you've gone into the 90s.
The long 90s is nuts.
I mean, the 90s really was fucking crazy enough because apart from what you were getting up to, your name had spread a lot further. So then there was a circle of people, a world of people that were just like, I'm going to keep out of this guy's way.
Chapter 3, Community. Yeah, I know. This bit's usually about creativity. And Mr. Met is very much creative. He still paints walls regularly and produces amazing black books and canvases. But, and I'm not sure about those that know him better, to me, London and culture in this story have produced a community voice and a leader. In this part, Mr. Met tells us what life's like having kids, looking out for his culture, the effects of Grenfell, and taking part in helping his community.
Well, look, let's move into the 2000s. What happened, man? How did it go?
So, this is where it's got good. For like the last 20 years, I've just been like the most stable. Well, not I had one bad patch through the mid-2000s. I had one bad patch where I just went like ill again. I had another relapse, and then I didn't go out for about a year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then apart from that, then after that, I've had kids, and I think it's the kids.
When did you meet your girl?
Met her in 99.
Okay, yeah. Cool. And then got with her around the same time?
Yeah, been with her ever since. You know,
like, so she helped. She went through a couple of things with you then?
Yeah, she's gone. She's gone through, you know, like me going away and, you know, like the police coming to the house looking for me. And, you know, like and then my relapse where I, not relapse through drugs, and I ain't touched any, I don't even smoke weed, mate. I ain't touched any kind of drug in like 20 years or something.
Yeah,
I just drink beer, you know. But where I just went ill, you know, I just went down, and then that was like for about a year or something. I didn't go out, and then but then since we've had kids,
so you had your kids after that,
yeah,
and then,
but in this meantime as well, I've brought up a 22-year-old, you know,
okay,
so well, like I got a 22-year-old now. From she, that, but she doesn't remember any of these.
So you've had your last relapse in the mid-2000s, early to mid-2000s, and then you go and you decide, right, we're going to have kids, we're going to move this on, we're going to start building our family.
And then,
and where are you living? Shepherd's Bush?
Yeah, I live in Bush, yeah.
You live in Bush. Mm. And so you set up this family. How many kids you got?
Got like four little ones, you know, so they're like, how old are they? 10 down to one.
Wicked, man. Oh, your latest was last year, a year and a half ago. Yeah. So yeah, amazing. And so with all of your, like, all that shit you'd been through, which I'm going to say, like, a lot of it's horrific, like, a bit of a light word to put on it, really, man, because I can't, just you skimming over the stories, you can't imagine how gritty and dirty those pieces must have been. You went through an awful lot, and then for you to then decide to settle down with your missus and have these four kids and... I moved back to London in 2008, and I think I meet you early 2009 when Kremer Black opens, and I open the gallery downstairs. And I was like, this ain't me.
That's changed.
This isn't the guy that I was scared of. And I didn't, the first day I met you in the late 2000s, I thought I was meeting another Met.
Yeah.
I was introduced to you as Met, and I was like, okay,
This isn't the Met that I was scared of, though, is it? I didn't say it. I'm just thinking in my head. Because by then, you're obviously, you're a dad. You're a big part of the culture. CBM are a solid crew from West London and made an amazing name for themselves and own an area and have done for a couple of decades now. You started to, like, Trellick became a painting spot again. And Portobello and Shepherd's Bush and all that started to get gentrified. And, you know, the Pit went off Portobello.
Yeah.
And so what was going on in your head around then with those types of actions that were happening? So, because you've basically got a family, your mind state's changed, right? The scene in London is getting better because we've now got a graph shop, or another graph shop, should I say, after HQ's. Your crew's solid and West London's thriving. Trellick's on fire. There's lots of painting there. And then, but the area's getting ripped down. People are having to move out of the manor. We go through the recession and, you know, West London is just looking a bit curious.
It's changed. It's like I don't recognise the place. It's like, how many coffee shops do I need? You know, I don't drink coffee.
Yeah.
I don't drink coffee. I mean, I'm the kind of person, it's like I will go to a pub to meet friends. There's no pub.
No pub.
They're closing the pub down. They made out there was a smoking ban. The smoking ban, what? And then it opened like 1,000 shisha shops. It's like, it's just dumb. I'd see it's just all a load of rubbish, you know? It's just all a load of rubbish. These people that are coming in, these Tarquin, and
yeah,
they're just like pushing their own agenda and, you know, like thinking, like looking at people like they're shit or whatever. It's like, no, it's like the only reason the area's got any culture is because of people like myself. And the people that are around there that made...
It's the only reason that those people want to come. I mean, West London has always had that border. You've always had the states.
Yeah, you've always had the rich bit.
It's the same with Kilburn. We've got estates and houses, estates and houses. It's the same in West. But there's something seems to have happened here. And up to recently, you know, last year with Grenfell, it seemed like...
Trying to put an Islam thing on it, you know, like the Sun and all them papers, you know, like saying, you know, they keep, when they keep showing them pictures in the news and that, you know, that's like all ladies in hijabs and all right, it wasn't like that. The area's never been like that. It's always been mixed.
It's fully mixed.
There's been like old white Irish people and all, and there's everything in that area, you know, the way they've put it so people in the northern towns up north is thinking, oh, but there was like 15 to a flight and rah, they shouldn't have been here. It's just a load of rubbish. It's completely not a load of crap. Then people have been downtrodden. It's just absolutely disgusting. It's like, I have to look at that out my window every day.
What happened the next day?
Do you know what I have to see? I'm telling you what I have to see, D. Right? Every day, twice a day, right? I go past that building every day, twice a day. Every single day, yeah? You know that second day, that the first day when it was up and I saw it on the news? Me and Nick flew down there, yeah, right? And we flew down, and I was around the whole day. And then I was out the second day, yeah? And then the third day, that's when the Queen come, right? And I remember the Queen was there, and she was under that West Bay Centre. And I just wanted to get home to my missus. I ain't been home for 2 days, yeah? Right? I stunk. My clothes stunk of smoke. You know, like, I'd just been helping out, and I felt like shit. I just wanted to go home, yeah? And I wanted to cry,
yeah.
Right? My skin, you know, from that smoke, you know where I wore one of them oxygens was full of boils all over my face. You know, where I haven't been drinking water or whatever. I was sucking up that air.
Toxic air.
And it had these yellow spots all over my face. And the Queen was there. And then they're saying you have to stand there. I go, I don't fucking stand there. I was getting really angry, yeah? And it's like, you can even see it on that news thing where the Queen is there. You can see me standing there. I've got like a stripy rugby on it and I'm vexed.
Okay.
People are clapping. I just want to just move, yeah? I just want to go. And I still see it now. I have to see it every single... When I look out the window, that's what I see. When I look out the window, I see the black burnt building, right? It's so affected my kids because they have to see it all the time. And it was like, I don't know if a couple of kids from my girl's clock, not my girl's year, passed in there. And that's all we see. That's all we see. We go to jiu-jitsu. We go see it twice a day.
What happened the following days? So, because that's your area, as you say, you see it from out your window. Something happened with the community. A dreadful thing, the worst thing that West London has seen for many,
when you come together. Years. You know, like a lot of the, even the rich people. You know, like I didn't see any like a, you know, like a separation.
There was no slacking.
There was no slacking. At first it seemed like, because I had some girl, she just come up because we was with it's me, Nick, Noel Clark, and I don't need a name check or whatever, but yeah. There was like a few of us, and we was like just grabbing stuff and, you know, like helping carry things, and then this girl, she goes, my mum's died, and then she's crying on my shoulder, right? And it's like, what do you say? You can't pat someone on the head, you know, like a dog, you know? And then when we got into the main bit that is downstairs where the families were, and then we were first on the thing, and we're carting stuff down there, and I've never heard a scream like that, like a woman screaming about a baby, and you know, like, and you're just sitting there and you're carrying bedding and laying beds, you know, and it's like a war zone. It's like an absolute war zone. You know, like for something that's supposed to please people going on the motorway so they don't have to look at an ugly building while they go to Westfield. You know? That's all it is.
And for the neighbouring,
houses, neighbouring streets. They don't want to see it.
It's unbelievable. They covered it with that bullshit just because of an eyesore.
I think it's affected me now. You know, sometimes, you know, I'm just too strong to get ill because I can't get ill because I've got four young kids. Before I didn't have four young kids, you know.
You would have let go, yeah.
I could afford to get ill and go mad. I can't afford to get ill and go mad. And it's like, but yeah, I could easily get ill over something like that.
So, I mean, look, it's not so, it's such a horrible event to have happened. But in the months after, I saw a group of you, all of you West London boys, I'm literally getting goosebumps and a shiver up my spine thinking of it. The moves you made for I want to cry. Like, the moves you lot made to be a voice for the people of Grenfell was so fucking touching. And I think the other thing you've done, though, is you've become, because of all the shit you've been through, you're like, no, I'm not having this.
No, I ain't. I don't want to have it. That's why I thought, you know, like we painted the Grenfell thing up. We've done that. Nick put in for a lot of the paint and we spent the whole day down there. We painted that up and we thought, right, that's our thing, right? Because they're trying to build on the same spot as like Trellick, you know, they're trying to take something away. And it's like, what are they building? They're building more posh shit, you know? It's like, and like, they're taking the kids' playground
away. They're not building for the people.
They're taking the kids' playground away to build on it, you know? It's like, all right. We use what we've got. And then it's like, you know what? Fuck it. We're having a jam here. And we're going to have it. And we're going to raise some money for the people of Grenfell. And we're going to take them stuff. And there's nothing you can do about it. And you know what? The police didn't even step foot in the place. Because the first times we've done them jams, we've done, what, three?
Yeah.
And the second one, police come through. And it goes, who's in charge of all this here? Blah, blah, blah. And then the policeman's come up to me like, all brazen and everything, and it's like, right, well, and I goes, well, what's it about? You can see there's just like a load of kids painting. I've organised all the paint from bringing up paint companies and what have you for the kids to have a paint. We've mulched the walls, we've sorted it all out ourselves. What's your problem?
And we're standing in the shadow of that fucking building.
Yeah, what's your problem? And he's gone, we had a report of a kid running through with a knife. It's like, get the fuck out of here, man. You can see there's little girls in little white dresses painting on the wall. They're painting cats and stuff. And he's talking about, you know, it's like, get
bullshit.
Out of here, you know? So, yeah, they just leave us alone, I think.
You seem to have started a movement, though. You seem to have, there's like a real solid voice there now. And, I don't, you know, we get caught up in our little social media circles. And I don't follow hundreds of people, thousands of people on my social media feeds, but I follow you and... You have this. I just think for the story, for where you've come from, you don't owe the world anything, and yet you're giving it so much. And, you know, it is about life experience, because that's what really makes you understand and want to help. I've known people like you, though, man, that haven't done what you've done, and I find it amazing. Like, I've good friends of mine. I've literally got very similar stories to you, people I grew up with. I'm thinking of my mate Justin right now. And I love Justin, but he wouldn't do what you do. You've got this voice that you seem to be pushing out there. You're
And all right, cool, you've got your own issues and you understand that, you know, you sometimes get depressed or whatever, like we all do.
Yeah.
But your voice to other people is so fucking positive and uplifting, and you've got like a fight in there as well. Like, and I look at that manor and I'm just like, what a horrible thing to have happened, but what a beautiful thing to have been born. Like, and the fact that you're, as far as I'm concerned, you're a massive part of it, man.
Well, the way I see it, whatever is down has to come back up, you know, like a ball or whatever. And it's like, I'd rather be up than be down. So that's the way I'm
And you want to bring other people.
That's how I'm trying to live it. And that, yeah, I've always been the same. If I've got like a, if I've got 10 pence, I'll give someone 5 pence, you know. Mm. It's like, I've always been the same. That's why I don't have a lot of money, you know, so.
Yeah. You look out for people.
Yeah.
It's crazy what life experience does to you, eh? And then what, getting a few things in perspective and love as well. Love's a fucking amazing thing in the world. Sorry to get all gloomy, but I thought it was important to talk about that because, you know, you're a voice for it, I feel. Before we finish, apart from, I literally think of you as a community god. I don't need to put you up on a pedestal, but like the way you treat your kids, the way you treat your friends, your crew and your neighbours, I'm just like, this guy, man. And to go for all of that and be like, it's amazing. But you're also doing something within the culture that we've needed for a long time, which is what I wanted to talk to you about as well. And I don't want you to give away too much because it's very special. But the graffiti culture in our city has lacked something. And we need education for our kids. And I think you're doing something else here. So, so what is it you're doing?
Well, basically, I see like a, you know, basically every country, every state has their own sort of documentary on their scene. You know, like you have one in Amsterdam.
Yeah.
You got like one in Paris. You got like Star Wars and you got all these other things, and there's nothing in London, just a bummy video, you know, that's out, just showing old runners and some old shaky action footage, and it gives us a bad look, you know.
I tell you what though, love to those old films, White Trash and Kino's London Graphics, they're not documentaries.
No, I'm talking that London Tonight crap, don't like that, you know, like it just gives us a bad look. It looks like there's like people involved are like a load of kids, you know, it's like a, there's obviously more to it. Yeah. It's like, what motivates someone? You know, like, what makes someone do it for 30 years, you know? It's like,
Three solid
who
decades.
Are these people doing it, you know? It's like, so that's basically what I want to put through, who these people are, because they're not all kids. They're not, not all poor. They come from a vast range of backgrounds, colours, you know, like everything. You know, it's like, so I want to get that down.
So you're making this, like, it's... it's more than just the London history.
Yeah.
You're taking all of it. You're going London history to
I've started now. London history. Yeah. We started going back from the 70s and now we're going into the 80s.
Uh-huh.
But I want to take it to the kids that are out there doing it now.
Uh-huh.
But I want to show like some, you know, like a, some, you know, like some woman that's just hoovering the carpet, you know, like who thinks it's, you know, like some kids on the stairs or whatever. It's not kids on the stairs. It could be your husband, you know. It could be like your granddad could be doing it, you know. Like anyone. It could be absolutely anyone. And that's what I really want to show. But I want to get the history down because it needs to be put down. And I want to get it put in a... I don't want it a film just for writers to look at. I want a documentary that everybody can look at. And, you know, like a... Let them know that it ain't just vandalism, because vandalism is throwing a brick through a window, you know. There's some thought and process into it, you know, like it's something that takes years and years, you know.
Well, I think the other, another major part of graffiti is the fact that it, apart from the outcome, the painting on the wall or the tag or whatever, it's the friends and the family and the community and everything else it teaches you, and you become part of. If you didn't have graffiti.
If I didn't have graffiti, I don't even think I'd be able to tell those truth.
I don't think you would, bro.
I don't think I would. I do not.
If your eyes weren't open enough to see those walls and think, okay, there's something there.
And I thank God for that pen I stole out in the 80s. I do. I really do.
Listen, man, that is a fucking journey. Like, I really appreciate you coming around and talking to me about it, man. And really fucking touching, and just keep all of it going, because you're a massive inspiration to people. And you know, I tell you what, even I think you'll be probably even more so now after they hear this story, because it's hard for people to go through their lives, man. We all struggle in our lives, and you've had fucking quite a ton of bricks chucked at you, you know, and you've managed to break them all down and come through and be a distinguished guy, bringing up four beautiful kids and having a good wife and a community spirit. Listen, Mr. Met, the mayor of fucking Shepherd's Bush himself. Thank you very much. Much appreciated.
Well, what a story. Mr. Met has sure been through more than his fair share of life's dramas. But with his love for culture always being with him, his wife, his family, and being a proud dad, he's become a massive part of his community in a real positive way. Mr. Met surely deserves the title Mayor of Shepherd's Bush. Big up CBM. Never forget Grenfell. Until the next one, love your city and love your culture. This is F24.